If you like the book more than the movie, then stay tuned because this is Faction Fandom.
I don't know where that came from.
No, I like that. That's good. It's good music. We may just keep that in.
Oh, God. Why would you do that?
Because I'm desperate to make things funny. Welcome back, listeners, to episode 27 of Faction Fandom, where we talk about the Divergent Trilogy by Veronica Roth. My name is Stephanie.
And my name is Alyssa.
And this is episode 27.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I don't introduce that enough. So that's what we do. We talk about the Divergent Trilogy.
Among other things.
Among other things, yeah. You'll learn. So, Alyssa, what have you been doing lately as far as bookish things go?
Bookish things, I've been very seriously contemplating an actual book ban.
Wow.
I know, right? It's shocking. I'm not sure. I'm really... I need to stop buying books.
Okay.
Reading books, but I need to stop buying books, like, really badly. It's a problem.
Like most addictions, it takes all your money.
It does take all your money, which is what the problem is that I am now, like, penniless. It's a great time.
I have no money to buy, like, books at all. But at the same time, it's been pretty good because I've been in a book slump.
Ugh.
Where I haven't read anything productive. I've been binge watching Netflix. I started watching Leverage.
Oh my God, I love it.
If you don't know what this is, it's amazing. And you've got to watch it because your life will just be like, quiet. I feel like you were filling the missing piece of the puzzle. It's a fantastic show and I love it.
And Christian Kane.
It's Christian Kane, Elliot.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Where are you at?
He is, like, one of the few men in my life that I'm okay with being on the short side.
Yeah.
Like, he's not short.
He's not short, but he's not super tall either.
But he's not tall either. Oh, man.
Oh, man. What season are you in?
I think I'm in season 3. No, I'm in season 2.
Season 2 is my favorite. Anyway.
Back to books. So, yeah.
Books are the worst.
I've just been binge watching. But I love books. I want to read more
books. I do, too.
Back to Susan asks, though. Since we got nothing to talk about book-wise.
Because we're both in book slumps.
We're both in book slumps and watching Netflix too much.
That's a problem.
Alyssa, will you pull up a Susan asks or any kind of Alyssa asks thing?
Sure.
For those of you who don't know, Alyssa runs a book blog, literally a bookblog.com, if you want to go check her out. Anyway,
it's not so Tumblr. It's not .com.
.tumblr.com. Whatever. You know,
I'm not cool enough for a .com. I get book questions occasionally. And most recently I was asked where I buy my specifically British edition books. It kind of brings to mind all of the beautiful covers from around the world that I just covet on so many levels. But specifically, most recently I bought the British version, the British covers of The Raven Cycle.
Mm.
I was rereading them the other day and I was like, oh, I forgot. When they're British covers, it means that they're British English on the inside.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so I got hit with petrol and car park and colored with a U.
What's car park?
Parking lot.
Oh.
It's not that cool. You thought it was going to be more interesting than it was.
I did. I thought it was going to be slang for something cool.
No, it's just a parking lot. But anyway, so the answer to the question is that I typically get all of my international covers from Book Depository. But the secondary part of this question that I got was that Book Depository never has the book covers that they want, which is unfortunate. I've never really had a problem getting books from Book Depository. Sometimes I just love the covers from different countries more than I like the American covers. And I usually get them on Book Depository.
Here's the question.
Occasionally. Yeah.
Say hypothetically you have, I don't know, we'll do Cinder because I've seen a lot of the different covers for Cinder.
Okay.
And then there's like the French version of Cinder. The French version is gorgeous. I don't speak French.
Right.
So.
Nope.
And I don't know if you speak French, but.
I do not.
Would you buy the French version just for the color cover if it was amazingly beautiful? Even though you don't, you know, like you literally are paying that much money for the whole cover. Like you're not going to read this book. You just want to have it on your shelf.
I don't think I could. The only time I typically will buy multiple copies of a book is if I have it on an ebook and I want a physical copy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what happened with the Raven Cycle. I've done that. I did the same thing with Cinder, the Lunar Chronicles. I have all of them on ebook and I also have them in hardcover. But yeah, I will typically only buy multiple copies if I have it on ebook. I covet the covers from afar and go, it's so incredibly pretty and I love everything about it, but I can't justify buying a different language just because of the cover.
Maybe if I made more money. I would do that.
And maybe if I like won the lottery.
I will say that I only have one book that is a different, like a foreign edition. And that is My True Love Gave to Me. And I specifically wanted to buy it because I wanted to get the baby blue and the hot pink cover with the Christmas lights and the gold metallic beautifulness of the cover. And I went on Amazon UK. Did I spend more than I needed to get it? Yes, but I really wanted it. And I didn't have the book like in the physical copy. I'm kind of the same way as Alyssa is. I have a bunch of stuff on audio, but not Kindle or ebook. I guess you could go do that with anything if you were doing it with Amazon, although I don't recommend you do that with Amazon.
I don't really like Amazon. No, but Book Depository is owned by Amazon, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that they're just generally, the service is generally better and the price differences is not that far off for the most part from what the publisher standard is.
You know what I would also recommend? You know, want to support your authors, go directly to their website or to their publisher's website. Like a lot of people put their books on pre-order on their website, not on Amazon or Book Depository or Barnes & Noble or whatever your book company is. And you can order it from them directly. And they may not know, but they can put you in touch with somebody who knows. And that's always a fun trip.
Yeah. Yes. For sure.
Because I am kind of in love with the foreign editions of Rainbow Rowell.
I love the UK versions. I am.
I need them. I desperately need them because the only Rainbow Rowell book I own physically is Fangirl. And it's not even my fave.
Babe, you may need to get it. I don't have attachments, actually.
One's my fave.
Attachments is a little creepy.
Hold on, why is it creepy? Well, but it's so cute.
A little bit creepy.
It's creepy, but Lincoln isn't a creeper. Let's get that straight. He wouldn't be doing that if it wasn't his job.
I think he maybe goes a little above and beyond his job when it comes specifically to her emails.
Okay, I can't talk to you about this right now because I'm in love with this book and these characters. So, I mean.
That's fine. You're allowed. Anyway,
moving on though.
So moral of the story is you can, I mean, it's just a matter of searching for them. Alternatively, if you happen to know people on the internet who are from foreign countries,
there you go.
You can always ask them to buy it or pay them to buy it for you and then ship it to you. Tumblr is a great place for that.
But we are going to move on. So chapter by chapter, we have come to the point where you're all been waiting for. We are ending Insurgent.
We are.
And it's going to be a glorious time because there's not one chapter in here that I like think is boring at all.
No.
Did you have any favorite quotes and or like moments?
I actually kind of really enjoyed it when, I don't have any favorite quotes. I enjoyed a lot of it. The last chapters were arguably my favorite of the book. I really liked the end when they're watching the video.
The only one that I can think of off the top of my head, and it was the moment when they bring Triss down, and she's like a prisoner, and she's down there, and they're all in Erudite, and she and Christina are hanging together, like bleeding together, and Christina's like, "What do you think they're gonna do with us?" And Triss says, "I think they're gonna make us eat lots and lots of cake and take a very long nap."
That's a great line. I
have friends like that.
I do have friends like that.
Isn't that what you want at the end of a battle? Is just to eat lots of cake and take a nap.
I'd love to take a nap at the end of a battle.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to start off with chapter 43. And previously, we left off with Fernando dying. And that was super emotional. Couldn't really
not over it.
But at this point, there's Triss, Christina, Kara, and Marcus. And they're in Erudite now. And eventually, Caleb finds them. Triss and Caleb have this like argument, and he basically says, we find that, you know, we just see him and how devoted he is to the cause, quote unquote. And so see, Marcus basically knocks him out with a gun.
Yay. He's like, "I'm not actually one of like the first times I cheered for him." It out.
But conveniently enough, Triss has like inner conflict with that because she's like, "I don't like Marcus. Why am I cheering him on?" Because I don't like Caleb either. Weird. I don't like this at all. So she has that too. So they're going. They leave Kara in the lab or in with Caleb where she was on the computer. And then we see Edward. And Edward's not going to let them pass, obviously. So shit goes down. They shoot each other. Christina gets shot in the leg. Edward gets shot in the side. It's very dramatic. And once again, they lose one more person on their march to the labs. So now it's just Triss and Marcus. And they split up. And they go into these two rooms where Triss runs into a simulation room. And that's chapter 43. And before we go on to 44, I wanted to ask you this super long thing. Because you remember the argument Triss and Caleb had, right?
Right.
He wasn't the one torturing her. You know, they're arguing and he's like, "I didn't torture you. I didn't do any of that." And he says, "What could I have done to stop her?" And she says, "You could have tried, you coward. You tried and failed because you love me." And his reaction is not visible at all. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't, like, squint. He doesn't, like, back away like someone slapped him in the face or anything like that. I mean, he doesn't have very much reaction to that one line, which to me feels like a verbal slap in the face. So what do you think was going through Caleb's head when Triss told him that?
She's
basically accusing him of not loving her, isn't she?
Yeah. I mean, he's just so devoted to what he thinks is right. And I think he's also just really devoted to logic. And people who are really devoted to logic tend to have a really difficult time with the concept of love. I don't know what's going through his mind. He's probably trying to figure out, what could possibly be the reason for her to have this kind of emotional outbreak.
I don't know if this line or this quote was meant to be analyzed. That really struck me. I mean, it felt like it was a very...
It's a poignant line. I think it says a lot about her more than anything else.
She still has... And I don't know that we ever find out whether Caleb is divergent or not, having multiple, having preferences for multiple factions. But Triss still has this abnegation care in her heart. Their relationship fascinates me.
Yeah.
But then chapter 44 happens.
So chapter 44 occurs when Triss walks into, or runs, really, into... one of the two simulation rooms. So she gets in there and she's confronted by herself. So she battles herself, outsmarts herself. And during this fight with herself, picks up a gun, and which she hadn't done the entire book. And it's at that point that the simulation turns from herself into Will. Triss basically, has a moment of, utter despair when she realizes she's going to have to shoot him again. So she closes her eyes. She just says, "I'm sorry." And she shoots. Crying, crying, crying. But she has shut her eyes so she doesn't have to see. And that's the end of chapter 44.
What's the line? It's like at the end of the chapter. Does the one thing that her double can't do.
And I do the one thing my double is unable to do because she is not desperate enough. I fire.
What did you think about that?
Here's my thing about the double. She treats the simulation as if it were real. And to a point, it is real for sure because she is injured. She gets injured. She gets hurt. But, I think to say that her simulation double is going to feel desperation, I think is indicative of her age and understanding of the situation. I mean, she's 17, and 17-year-olds aren't particularly well known for their stability of emotion. The fact that she transfers this emotion onto a simulation double.
Because her double is similar to her enough to be able to make her own gun appear, but not similar enough to actually fire it.
No.
That's what I got from that anyway. Maybe it's not the same as what you're saying, but that's what I mean. I was like, okay.
No.
How similar is her double exactly?
Well, I just don't think, the problem is that it's a computer. At the end of the day, it is still a computer. And while computers can do a lot of damage, as we've learned through countless science fiction books and movies, computers can do a lot of damage when they have AI. At the end of the day, they don't feel, they don't have this emotion and they don't have these reactions. And the fact that she's trying to expect that a computer simulation that your mind is making up, her mind is making up this simulation through the computer, and the computer is making it real. And so it's shocking to me that she thinks that her double is going to be desperate when at the end of the day, it doesn't exist.
Does she retain any of the injuries that she got from that onto the screen? I don't think it said that
I
she
don't
did
think
or didn't.
She does.
That was really interesting. The double itself confused me. And I like the double scene in the movie just a little bit more at this point, because at least that one made sense. But we'll move on to chapter 45 because I can't help but laugh. I just love these chapters so much more than the movie. But chapter 45... She finishes the simulation. Everything is all good. So she goes to the next room that she's trying to get to. And she finds Tori and Janine. I don't know. Tori's like about to kill her. And Janine's like, doing something. They're just having like a last words moment, I think. Mm-hmm. And Triss is like trying to plead her case. She's like trying to tell Tori, no, this Janine's important. I hate her too, but she's important. And Tori calls her a traitor and they fight. And this is where I started laughing because they're, how many people has she fought so far?
A lot.
At this point, a lot of people. I mean, there was Edward and herself and now Will, and she had, they had to get through the soldiers on the outside. And so now she's fighting Tori, and I just had, I mean, they're like pulling hair and biting each other. And I just have like this flashback of Mean Girls where they're like,
oh God,
when they're all animals and they're just going at it. And I feel like they're fighting, because when you think about it, they're like being vicious and fighting over information. And it's just, it's so funny to me. I couldn't help but laugh. Like Tori bit her and I was like, oh my God. But so they fight.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work out though, because once all that is done, Tori stabs Janine anyway. So she died.
Right. Gone, gone, gone.
Which is kind of anticlimactic, isn't it? She had no last words. Crazy.
Yeah.
But that happens. And then chapter 46.
Oh, yay. So Tobias and Uriah burst in after, you know, Triss and Tori are just standing there for a little while. They're having a moment. Janine is dead. Triss is declared a traitor. She's betrayed Tobias in the worst of possible ways by believing in Marcus, because how dare she?
Mm-hmm.
Then Triss goes on this, like, massive, massive rant. After Tobias calls her a liar for the 15th time, she says, I think that you're a liar because you tell me you love me, you tell me you trust me. What does she say? And the first second that belief in my perceptiveness, that trust, that love is put to the test, it falls apart. So you must have lied when you told me that, when you told me all those things. You must have, because I can't believe your love is really that feeble. And then she tries to explain everything. Uriah gets his gun taken away by Therese. And at this point, all of the Dauntless people's guns are being taken away.
That was manipulative, wasn't that?
It was very manipulative.
I remember reading that for the first time and being like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. That's sneaky.
So she's taken downstairs as the prisoner. She sees Kara again, Kara and Christina. They try to start talking about the simulation that she went through. And it bothers Christina that it was a simulation without a transmitter. This is where she says, I think they're going to force us to eat lots of cake and then take an unreasonably long nap. Then Uriah sees Lynn, who is very much hurt. Uriah's like, she's very much hurt. She keeps saying she's going to die. And then we find out that she loved Marlene, and then she dies. It's very sad.
Ta-da!
And that's the end.
Almost.
Almost the end. What happens next, Stephanie?
Well, he's in the chapter. Next, I ask you what you thought about Lynn dying. Specifically, what did you think of Lynn's confession?
I think it was unnecessary.
Okay. This is why I wanted to ask you, because like on the one hand, this was the author's way of being able to plug some LGBT in her story. On the other hand, what was the point of doing that? This character just died.
Like there was literally, I do not recall at any point when Marlene died that Lynn was like more distraught than anyone else.
Okay, but I will say that I don't know. Is it safe to say that Lynn's pretty much like the hardest character in here? She's always got one emotion and it's kind of like irritated slash fed up. She's a very hard person.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think maybe that was why she was hard.
Yeah.
If that's where she's going with it. However, when you're reading this, your first thought is she just plugged that in. Like she just, there was no point to that.
I read it the first time and was like, are you kidding me? In my mind, it was unnecessary. It was just a straight plug to throw in some LGBT and no purpose to the plot. It serves no purpose. So at that point, it's just a pandering move to the community, and it bugs the shit out of me. And I was annoyed that she did it.
I feel that way too. I feel like, and I hate to say it like this, but I feel like Veronica Roth wrote, you know, two books and she's like, oh crap, I forgot to put an LGBT character in here. Well, one's going to die, so I might as well make her gay. She's pretty cranky anyway. So
in love with Marlene.
I thought it was cheating.
It was cheating.
A better question would be Triss's big rant. Do you think that's an outburst or do you think that's a calculated accusation?
Again, she's 17. She's highly emotional. She's suffering PTSD. I think maybe a little bit of both.
Okay.
I don't know. You know my feelings on Triss and Fort.
I do. I guess you are a bad person to ask that question to.
The romance was unnecessary in my mind. And so this outburst of hers was a fun moment of, I am a teenager and I feel like I'm in love with you, but you say things and then you do different things. And then, you know, I don't know how to deal with you because I'm 17 and I'm so emotionally compromised by everything that's been going on. And I hate you.
Wow. That's a lot.
I mean, it,
no, but no, I asked you, and I know your thoughts on Tristan Forrest, though. I feel not. Like it was calculated. I feel like she's at the end of her rope, and she needed to say something that would get them to believe her. So she hit Tobias with her.
Yeah.
On top of it being true.
I think it's totally true.
Honestly, they both have been lying to each other. And Triss came out with all of her lies earlier, but now she's just, like, calling him out on it all.
She is calling him on his shit.
Yeah, from, like, forever. Like, he hasn't been trusting her at all, so, yeah. Nope. All right. And then, chapter 47. Evelyn announces, this is what happened. They took all the weapons. They're going to turn on all the factions. It's going to be one big thing where the factionless rule. Meanwhile, Tobias comes back, and he tells Triss she was right about everything. They kiss one last time, and then they play this video. And this video is, like, the most important part of the book here. Because this woman comes on, I mean, right in the middle of Evelyn's speech. And she's talking about, like, how humanity was sick with violence, and people were killing each other, and it was war, and it was horrible. And so they decided to contain a bunch of people. They say, come out in the world when that happens. By the way, my name is Edith Pryor. I'll be joining you. And then all hell breaks loose, and that's the end of the book.
Shocking.
So this video, I know we've talked a lot, and I know it's late, Alyssa, but I really want your opinion on this video. I get it, but I'm also confused by it.
I think what's really fascinating to me is that I don't know that divergents have become abundant, most specifically because it's Edith Pryor, and that's her mama. So it could really have only been one generation.
Well, Edith isn't her mom.
I thought Edith was her mother.
Her mom's name is Natalie Pryor.
Oh, God, that's right. Okay, so how many? So Edith was who?
We don't know. We just know that Triss is a descendant of this woman making the video.
Right. Okay. So we don't know how long they've been there.
Interestingly enough, Triss's father would have been the one to have the prior name. Am I right?
Yeah.
So either somebody had to have given the woman a prior name, or her father was the one carrying the divergent gene.
I think probably her mother was also carrying the divergent gene.
I think so too, but I think we don't give Papa Pryor enough credit. Basically, what I want to know is if this is a disease and everybody has it, and only the divergent people are going to be the ones to deliver them out of, you know, Egypt kind of thing. Does that mean that everybody wanted to kill everybody secretly who weren't Divergent in Chicago?
I don't know.
There are a lot of unanswered questions here.
I imagine a lot of them get answered in Allegiant.
I think so, too.
Says the woman who's read it.
I don't remember a lot of it. I mean, it was...
It's just the whole system is very strange.
It was confusing. I'm just going to say that. But that's the end of the book. Huzzah.
Huzzah. I've done it.
I'm wired. I had a lot of coffee. Back. I'll tell you what. Because it's late, because it's been a long time, we're going to skip the game today.
Okay.
We'll do something fun next time. Right now, I want to know, what do you want to see from Allegiant? Is there anything specifically that you want to happen?
Well,
even things you know that aren't going to happen.
I'd like to see Uriah's babies.
Mm.
Pretty sure that's not going to happen, but I want to see them. I'd like to have the whole idea behind the Divergent thing cleared up a little bit. That would be nice. I don't know, I'm kind of just looking forward to, like, hearing what it's like outside.
I know, right? Is it going to be like, what's that Night Shyamalan movie where the village? Did you ever see that?
Yeah, no, because I don't watch horror movies.
It's not like a horror movie, though. It's like a suspense movie.
Yeah, I don't watch those.
It's like a classic.
You don't know?
It's like Sixth Sense.
What? Ew.
Did you watch The Sixth Sense?
Unfortunately, I have had several people force me to watch it. I don't watch these movies.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
You don't want to be sitting up with me in the middle of the night while I'm thinking about this shit. Now I'm going to be thinking about this. Oh, my God.
I mean, you don't have to think about it. Just watch some Disney or something. You'll be good.
I'm going to go cry in a corner. Thank you.
You'll watch CSI, but you won't watch horror movies. I mean, Criminal Minds.
Yes. Mostly because I know. So, okay. There is a difference between true crime and true crime-esque and horror, suspense, and thriller movies. In true crime and true crime-esque things, the worst thing that could happen is the human imagination and what the human imagination can do, which is terrible. But in a horror, yes, suspense, and thriller movie, the worst thing that could happen is my nightmares taking shape. I don't watch this shit.
I can respect that. I don't like to watch horror movies for the same reason, because I don't like getting scared. Okay. Well, we're excited to see Uriah's babies.
Yep.
Plus, there are the 4 short stories. We should probably review that.
I thought we were going to do those after Allegiant.
You want to do them after Allegiant? Okay. Just stay tuned. So now moving on to end the show, we are going to talk about some books, some recommendations. I want to recommend horror movies in the spirit of this guy whose name I don't know.
Wes Craven.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I am actually not going to do a horror movie or a horror book or a crime book or anything like that. I recently finished reading Lois Lane Fallout by Gwenda Bond, and it was just amazing. It was such an easy read. It was so much fun. It's about Lois Lane as a teenager. Her father is a general and has been moving them around and gets a permanent station in Metropolis. And on her first day at East Metropolis High, she gets into trouble with the principal of the school and gets a job with Perry White, editor of the Daily Planet, who is running a teen newspaper blog thing called The Daily Scoop. And she meets all these people. But what's really kind of fun is that she has this online relationship with this guy called Smallville Guy, who we all know is actually Clark Kent,
Superman.
Oh, but
man.
He refuses. He flat out refuses to give his name, like any kind of information that could help her find him. He needs to keep his identity secret. And at one point he goes, "Trust me, Lois, when I can tell someone, you will be the first person I tell." And I was like, "Yeah, you will."
Oh my gosh.
I don't, you know, it was just a really fun, the journalist in me was sitting there going, "You go, Lois." And it was just a really fun, a very easy read. There's not a lot of mental capacity needed for this book, and that's okay. It's the first book in a series, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a fun, fun book.
Is it like a book or a comic book?
It's a book.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. It looks like a comic book, but it's a book.
Very cool.
It's very cool.
Man, now I think I may have to read it.
Oh, so much fun.
I want to get into comic books more. I may have to pick that one up. And who did you say it was by again?
Gwenda Bond.
Glenda Bond. I'm going to go ahead and recommend an actual book called Undertow. And now that I think about it, I don't know what the Undertow is. It is a book about mermaids, not flippy, be hair flip, look at my fins and my seashell bra kind of mermaid, but more like I'm from the sea and I have gills and I have powers and I'm vicious fish mammal kind of mermaids. Cool. These people walking out of the sea. I can't even explain that. It's very urban. Takes place in Coney Island. And it kind of dives into like the middle of these new mermaid people race have come up on the sea. And so they're trying to integrate like the mermaid warriors kids with our own kids in high schools. So it's kind of like this integration thing happening where you see a lot of parallels with the civil rights movements where people were like burning and, you know, news reporters outside the school and riots and all kinds of things happening. And it's about this one girl whose dad is a cop and she has to actually befriend one of these mermen children. And it sounds weird. I didn't explain it well at all.
That's really interesting. Bless you.
Thank you. But there's a big ending. I've been on the hunt for a good mermaid book for a while. And so when I got this, it wasn't what I was expecting, but I really liked it. But still really good. Worth checking out. It's very urban. Kind of like City of Bones, where there's like kind of magical things happening, but it's also in New York. It's very rough. It's very gritty. It's kind of not your typical mermaid story. And if you're looking for something different, I definitely checked out. It's called Undertow by Michael Buckley. And you said you're explaining what an undertow is, Alyssa. So what is it?
I'm a coastal girl, grew up on the coast, so that's why I know this. The undertow is when the tide is going out or when a wave is coming, is being pulled back into the water, what you feel mm-hmm. when the water's leaving, like say you're like in the water and okay. the water's pulling back, what you feel on your feet is called the undertow. And in some cases it's a lot stronger than in other places. In those places it's really dangerous. You can get sucked underwater and really it's not good. It's not healthy. It's not good.
When you say it's the thing in your feet, is that like the thing, like when you put your feet in the sand and you're standing in the water and so it's that pressure?
Yeah.
That pull that pulls you like down into the water? Or
yeah. Yeah. When the water is the undertow, not the sand.
Alrighty. So Alyssa has just informed me that Wes Craven died. And of course I had to ask her who he was. But because Alyssa doesn't recommend scary movies, I'm going to recommend them because these are classics for anybody who enjoys a good scary movie. He's done the Freddy Krueger movies, Nightmare on Elm Street movies. He's done all the Scream movies, not the TV show, but anyway. Last House on the Left, Red Eye, which has caught me by surprise anyway. So he's done like a ridiculous amount of horror cinema, a legend in my opinion. Even though I would never watch some of these movies because, oh my god, I would die in my nightmares. You know they say if you die in your nightmare, you actually die. When you die in your dreams.
Thank you.
Sorry. Anyway.
It is 10:30 where I am, and I am an old person.
You're not old.
I'm going to bed.
The people under the stairs. That movie has been out since
Jesus Christ, woman.
Anyway. So, that is it. That's the episode. We gotta go because Alyssa's gotta get to bed because she's an old lady.
I'm an old lady.
If you want to check out our website, subscribe to that, get all of the important news about the podcast when it happens. Check us out at factionfandom.com. Follow us on Twitter at FFandomPodcast. You can follow us on Tumblr at faction-fandom.tumblr.com. Also, please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes or even just rate us on iTunes because that would be really nice. And can't believe we've made it through 2 books. This is intense.
It's amazing.
This is a really big thing. And we thank you so much to everybody who's stuck with us. We wouldn't be doing the episodes if it weren't for you guys, because that's what keeps us going. Until next time, my name is Stephanie.
My name is Alyssa.
Bye.
Bye.
So I was like, you're here. And she's like, yeah, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, reading. Well, why don't we go do something? I can't. I have to read. What about tomorrow? Can't. I'm podcasting. What about tomorrow afternoon? I have to work. What about tomorrow morning at church? She hates me right now.
Yeah, and I don't do that.
You don't go my grandparents.
I don't. Do I? No. No, I don't camp. Stephanie?
What?
Do I look like a person who would camp?
Well, I mean, no.
No. Okay, no, that's actually not a fair, that's not a fair question.
Not particularly. Because
there are people who look better than me that camp. So, that's not a fair question.
Their lives together. They like... Not that you don't have your life together. I'm just...
Thanks, Stephanie.
I'm sorry.
I don't have my life together right now. It's like, fine.
Stephanie, I'll see you tomorrow. See you tomorrow. Drive safely. I won't be late. 11 o'clock. I won't be late. I will leave at 8 in the morning. I get flashbacks of Moses when they talk about that. Deliver us. You know the Prince of Egypt movie?
Babe, yes.
Where this girl got pregnant, and I noticed it was a cop show, and I'm...
Oh, Criminal Minds!
It's not Criminal Minds.
Are you sure?
I know you're quick to jump on that, but no.
Season 10 just came out on Netflix.
We all know Alyssa's love for Criminal Minds. Poke that, poke that, poke that, poke that.